This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Behind the back. Good defense turnover by Brooklyn. Here's Kuzma. Float game. No, Daniel Gafford there to clean it up.
Did that just happen?
Yes, it did.
That was actually an amazing play by Daniel Gafford last night. He not only has unbelievable hops, he's got incredible hang time. Dude just hung there until the ball came off the cylinder so that it was a legal follow-up dunk. But the Wizards lost last night, 113-107. I am back this morning with Denton. Thanks to Linnell for sitting in for me yesterday. You know, we're headed towards quite the matchup on Sunday between Washington and New York. I was going through kind of this late season high stakes game for both teams. It's been a while. I mean, last year Washington was a 6-6 football team. They had won four games in a row, and they hosted. At the moment, it was 8-4 Dallas. The game turned out to not be a super competitive game until late, if you recall. Cole Holcomb had that crazy pick six that got him back into the game. Kyle Allen had a perfect ball to DeAndre Carter, who's been outstanding in Los Angeles this year for the Chargers. And Carter couldn't pull it in, and that would have been a chance for Washington to actually pull off what would have been a miraculous comeback. But the matchup, you know, late in the season, week 13 of a 6-6 Washington team and an 8-4 Dallas team is really the most high-stakes matchup for Washington against a division team until we get to Sunday, where it's 7-5 against 7-4. You know, even if you go back to that 2016 season finale when Washington had to win as an 8-6-1 team just to clinch a playoff berth, which would have been their first back-to-back playoff seasons since 91-92, the Giants had nothing to play for in that game. They were a 10-5 football team. They had already clinched their playoff spot in their playoff seeding. Really, you almost have to go back to find this kind of aggregate record of 7-5 versus 7-4 in week 13 or later. You got to go back to 2005, Christmas Eve 2005, right? 17 years ago, when the 8-6 Washington Redskins surging in that second year of Joe Gibbs down the stretch to what would ultimately be a playoff bid and their last playoff win. They were matched up on Christmas Eve at home as an 8-6 football team against the Giants, who were 10-4. That's really you to find something the equivalent of this in week 13 or later. You really have to go back to that. 2012, the season finale against the Cowboys was obviously for the division. Okay, so that stands out. I didn't forget that. I was looking more for week 13. Yeah, that, of course, the season finale against the Cowboys in 2012, RG3's year when they won, you know, seven games in a row to end the season, and they played the Cowboys with a win or go home, environment. And that's the biggest late season game we've had since, 1992. I mean, there were a couple here and there. 99, there was actually a big game in December with the Cardinals, who were in the division back then. In 2001, Marty's one season here, Washington was surging and had a big home game in the latter portion of the season against the Eagles. You can go to the North 2000 season for that game against the Giants at FedEx Field. But this feels, especially given that Washington's playing so well and looks like a playoff team, not a backdoor playoff team, not a team that's surging at the end and needs to win four in a row or five in a row or six in a row to make it there, but is 7-5 through 12 weeks and is playing a 7-4 football team who has fallen on tougher times here recently, the Giants. A lot of that has to do with injuries, and we're going to talk about the Giants' injury situation. They have a hell of a lot of players on their injury report this week. However, a lot of those players may be back for them. A lot of those players were missing in their Thanksgiving Day loss to the Cowboys. But this one feels legitimately big, and I was watching a show last night. Is it called NFL Live? The show on ESPN with what's her face Ponders. What's her first name? Sorry,
Sam Ponder.
Sam Ponder is she the one that hosts NFL Live? I don't know.
No, that's Laura Rutledge.
Oh, Laura Rutledge hosts NFL Live. That's right. Another quarterback's wife, I guess. And she does a good job. She does a really good job in hosting that show. But they put up this week the big, playoff, matchups. Bills-Patriots tonight is a good one. By the way, Buffalo down to a 3.5-point favorite. That started at 5.5. A lot of sharp money tonight on New England. A ton of sharp money on New England. And there could be a smell test pick by the end of this show. I'm just waiting for a text message. It usually comes later the night before, and perhaps I won't get it. But I was looking at the big matchups, and they're like, well, Bills, Patriots, the Vikings and the Jets have a matchup. The Jets are 7-4. The Vikings are 9-2. The Jets, per some metrics, have the second best defense in the NFL behind the Patriots defense, who the Vikings faced last week. Titans Eagles, the 7-4 versus 10-1 team, was up on the list of big games. And then the two biggest games of the week were identified as Dolphins 49ers, and that is a hell of a game. That's not a national TV game. It's a 4:05 kick, but it's a CBS doubleheader week, which means most of the country will get Chiefs versus Bengals, which is the other game. You get Mike McDaniel against Kyle Shanahan, Dolphins, Niners, 8-3, 7-4, and you get Chiefs versus Bengals Sunday in Cincinnati. It should be a hell of a football game, the rematch of the AFC title game in the late window. And of the big games this weekend, I didn't see Washington Giants mentioned on NFL Live. And I'm like, wait a minute, 7-5, 7-4, big-time stakes game in the NFC playoff race? Yeah, it should be there. I had Steven ask me, do you still think it'll take 10 wins to get to the postseason in the NFC? I'll have an update on that coming up shortly. All right. Because things change, and the Seattle loss to the Raiders on Sunday was huge for Washington, for the Giants as well. And maybe for some teams that are a little bit further back in the pack. I came out of the open to the show today with a Wizards highlight because I watched the Wizards last night. I've actually, and I know some of you sometimes, Sheehan, it's November. Not so much on the Wizards. Well, I don't do that much on the Wizards, but they're a fun team to watch. They have right now in the trio of Porzingis, Kuzma, and Bradley Beal, a pretty good foundational group of top three players with some pretty good role players, Morris and Avdija and Kispert, who's been really playing well, and Gafford, and this kid Goodwin, who continues to play well, and Barton, Gill sometimes. But last night, man, you know, the thing that's just been for me in watching the Wizards in recent years, the thing that drives me crazy is just the unforced turnovers and the wasted possessions. I'd much rather, as a basketball fan, and someone who really does love basketball and has participated in basketball in so many different ways during the course of my life, I would rather have a bad offensive possession and shot than a turnover. And so many of the Wizards' turnovers end up being kind of on the perimeter turnovers. You know, Bradley Beal had 5 turnovers last night. And most of his turnovers over the course of the years have just been totally unforced turnovers. You know, and it's usually with Bradley, and God, I know they've tried to get this through to him. The ball is exposed way too much when he's being guarded closely. Way too much. Think about, for you basketball people, I mean, keep that dribble low in traffic. That ball should barely be coming off the floor. It comes off the floor way too high, is exposed way too often. And then so many times on a drive and a pass, there's just nobody there. It's frustrating. They had 14 turnovers last night. Several of them came in the fourth quarter with the game still within reach. They lost to Brooklyn 113-107. And people may point to the fact that they missed a lot of free throws, which they did, and that was a big difference. Porzingis missed like 5 or 6 free throws last night. Beal missed a bunch of free throws. And you can't miss those free throws on the road against a decent team in a close game. They were, I'm pulling up the box score right now, 23 of 34 from the free throw line, while the Brooklyn Nets were 24 of 26. They lost by 6 points. There's your difference. You can't shoot 67.5% from the free throw line. And especially when you're earning a lot of trips. They got there 34 times. Some of these losses sometimes with the Wizards are so self-inflicted, you know. They looked so good the other night against a Minnesota team that's, you know, was banged up and struggling and the whole thing. You know, they hung 142 points on them. You know, many more possessions in that game. And for the Wizards in that game, they only had 7 turnovers. 14 turnovers last night, to me, was the number one culprit in the loss to the Nets. Free throw shooting was next. You know, Brooklyn is, you know, obviously has struggled here in the early portion of the season with all of the Kyrie Irving stuff and everything else going on. Ben Simmons, who was not out there last night, but all of a sudden they've won 3 in a row, and that was a big win for them, and now all of a sudden they're a game above 500. But if the Wizards are going to be a playoff team, a top 6 Eastern Conference team this year, and not fighting to get into a best of 7 first round with a play-in situation or worse, they're going to have to stop with the self-inflicted damage. Free throws, but really for me last night, the turnovers. And I love Bradley Beal's game so much in so many ways, and his ability to score and his ability now to create. But man, he gets so loose with the ball. I don't know why he hasn't improved in that area over the years. Frustrating loss if you're a Wizards fan last night. Can we get to a quick what do you got?
All right.
What do you got?
So last night, Georgetown, okay, the Hoyas, who, I mean, let's face it, what are they going to do with Patrick Ewing? I mean, this has been an utter disaster, okay, the last couple of years. I mean, they gave him that extension when they won that Big East tournament with that unbelievable surprise run. But, you know, last year was the worst season we've seen, I think, in Georgetown basketball history. 0-19 in the Big East, 6-25 overall. This year, they have lost games to, you know, American University. They barely survived Coppin State in overtime. They are, you know, they were 4-3 going into last night. They got a win over UMBC the other night. Last night, and this is my what do you got, Georgetown at Texas Tech. Georgetown was a 24.5-point underdog. 24.5 point underdog. I would have to imagine, and I don't know this to be fact, but I would have to think that that's the biggest underdog Georgetown's ever been since pre-Big John, 1972 or whatever year that was. This is not, by the way, the Texas Tech team of the last couple of years either. You know, it's not a great Texas Tech team. I mean, it's not a bad team. They're better than Georgetown, a lot better. I mean, Denton, you're a college basketball fan. I can tell you this. I don't think Maryland's ever been a 24.5 point underdog, not against North Carolina or Duke, any one of those. Look, in the Big East, no offense to the Big East, in recent years, they haven't had, you know, the Villanova's been that team, obviously. But were they ever a 24.5 point underdog to Villanova? Maryland and a lot of teams in the ACC had chances to be 20 point dogs or worse to Carolina and Duke at various points in time. I don't think Maryland ever was 24.5. I'm not trying to do a Georgetown Maryland thing. I was just shocked at the point spread. I just can't imagine that Georgetown's ever been a bigger underdog than they were last night. By the way, they were down, I think, 25 at one point. They came back and cut it to 1 and then lost by 14. So they covered easily. But, man, I don't know what the answer is there. I don't. I feel for, you know, a lot of you, friends of mine who are, you know, diehard Georgetown fans. I don't know what you do. It's an expensive buyout. Patrick Ewing, the irony of Ewing is that early on when I watched Ewing's first couple of years, and whether it was Patrick or his assistants, I thought that they, you know, were decent in terms of how well coached they looked. But man, the Georgetown is irrelevant as a program. I mean, they have fallen off the map. You know, it's interesting when I talk about Maryland basketball, which is really my first love more than anything else. And man, is there a big game tomorrow night at Xfinity Center. I wasn't on yesterday morning, so I didn't have a chance to talk about the rout over Louisville. Look, Louisville stinks. But still, Maryland has two impressive wins over St. Louis and Miami, and the Terps are 7-0. They're ranked 22nd in the country. Kevin Willard is the first coach in the history of the Big Ten to win his first 7 games all by double digits. Maryland's not just winning games, they're blowing people out. Tomorrow night, a Big Ten opener against Illinois. Tickets are available. They are well-priced. All right, so go to umterps.com to get tickets. That building should be packed and alive tomorrow night. I will be there, by the way, tomorrow night. Can't wait for that one. 9 o'clock tip, no excuses. All right, no, you know, well, it's a 7 o'clock tip and the traffic and, you know, I got to get up early for work the next day. No, this is a Friday night 9 o'clock tip. And students, you know, and I hear from some of you every once in a while, typically when I criticize you, sorry, but don't give me it's too cold to walk over to the Xfinity Center tomorrow night. I know that it's sold out student ticket-wise, but that doesn't mean that everybody shows up. Show up for this one. Kevin Willard has no idea how good Xfinity Center can be. He has no idea. Trust me, I had a conversation with him a couple of months ago, and he goes, really? It's really good? We came here about 2 years ago or 3 years ago, and I don't remember being, it, you know, super intimidating. And I said, well, no offense. It was holiday time. The students were on break. And it was Seton Hall. I mean, it wasn't Michigan State. And he goes, well, we beat Maryland. I said, you beat Maryland back-to-back years. That's not the point. The point is, you know, you put together a good product. In the big games, especially, like tomorrow night, and they play UCLA on December 14th at home, and then obviously some big Big Ten games, maybe much bigger in terms of importance than we thought before the season began. You know, make Kevin Willard aware of what that building can be, because when it's good, it's top 5 to top 10 in the country. And everybody that knows college hoops understands that. Some of you have said, she and I was there. I was there for the Minnesota game. It was just okay. No, I get it. For certain games, it's not great. And certainly early season November games against Western Carolina isn't going to be a big deal. But when you're in that building for a big game against a big-time opponent, it is as intimidating, it is as loud as any place in the country. But I digress. Back to Georgetown. 24.5-point dogs. Denton, I've never seen that before with a program like Georgetown. I mean, there are programs that have fallen on tough times. You know, Kentucky's had it. North Carolina's had it. Duke's actually had a bad year. You know, if you go back to the year that Kay had pneumonia or whatever he had, or he had the back, whatever it was, and for whatever reason they didn't count those games against his record, or was it that they didn't want to? I forget what the situation was. I'm sure I'm going to hear from some Duke fans on that. But anyway, the college basketball the last couple of nights was pretty damn good. Virginia really, I mean, Tony Bennett and the program he's built in Charlottesville, ridiculous. They went on the road the other night. They got that win against Michigan. I don't want to hear from the Michigan fans either. That was not a foul at the end of the game. That was good defense at the end of that game. Also, you know, I flipped it after the Wizards game over to Indiana, North Carolina. Do you know North Carolina was number one in the country this time last week? They lost two games to Iowa State and to Alabama in four overtimes to Alabama, 103-101. And they dropped from number one to number 18. Denton, another one of those. I don't think I've ever seen that before. Dropping from number one to number 18 in one poll.
That has to be the biggest drop in college basketball history.
You know what, though? They're not that good. They got beat by Indiana last night. It's amazing they got to the national championship game last year. And, you know, the two wins over Duke, nothing – you talk to any – I mean, think about North Carolina, all their national championships, all of their glory, true blue blood in the sport. And a lot of Carolina fans will tell you that shutting down Kay in his final home game at Cameron Indoor in the season finale last year may be the most satisfying win they've ever had. And then to back it up in the Final Four was even better. I don't know if it was better, but it was close to good. Anyway, some good college basketball, some unfortunate turnovers and free throw shooting from the Wizards last night. When we come back, I have something that Ben reported last night. Ben Standing reported about Daron Payne, and we've got a couple of other things to get to. Gary Williams was on my podcast yesterday. I'm going to play some of that for you. His thoughts on the Terps here early in the season. Nick Ackridge, who is one of my favorites, he's become one of my favorites from PFF, is going to join us. He was on my podcast. I'm going to play some of that for you. And we're going to get a Giants update from Daryl Slater from NJ.com a little bit later on in the show. Ron Rivera and Taylor Heinicke spoke yesterday. We'll talk about that. And I don't want to back off the conversation that many of you have been pushing me to have, which is this idea that Carson Wentz would be the better option here at 7-5. We'll get to all of that this morning. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980, the team980.com. We're also free and live on the Odyssey app.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.
Well, we're going to continue to evaluate and go through some things. You know, we've got some personnel issues and everything that we've got to kind of sort through. So really won't make any decisions till Friday on guys.
That was Ron Rivera answering a simple question about whether or not Carson Wentz would return to the active roster for Sunday's game at New York. I think this is an interesting situation. He was designated to return to practice last week, remember, after missing six weeks with the broken finger that he suffered during that Bears Thursday night game. So they'll make a decision on him on Friday. I mean, look, if he is going to be suited up and is going to be the backup Sunday in the Meadowlands, you know, I guess Ron would prefer the Giants not know it until they have to know it. That's fine. If he's healthy and ready to go and he's not the backup, I think that's a mistake. I do. I don't think they need to worry about dealing with the constant, well, Carson's healthy and ready to go, so what are you going to do if Taylor falters? To hell with everybody and that thought. You got to do what's best for the football team, which is you are in a big time, high stakes December for the first time in a long time. And Taylor Heinicke, knock on wood, doesn't get injured. Remember, that was one of the big concerns with Taylor Heinicke early in those days after the Tampa playoff game and playing last year. Is, you know, he's not a guy that stays healthy. He had been injured like in three of the four NFL games he had played in. But he hasn't been injured. But what if he did get injured? What if he got injured in a 13-13 game in mid-third quarter in the Meadowlands on Sunday or 2 weeks later against the Giants at home? And you got to go with a rookie who's not ready. They should get him up and ready to back up Taylor Heinicke if he's physically able to do so. More coming up on the injury report, which, man, there were a lot of Giants on their injury report, but it's very possible they're going to get a lot of players back for this game that they did not have for their game against the Cowboys on Thanksgiving Day. Several of you, I got a text from a friend and I got a couple of tweets. Georgetown was a 20-point underdog against Villanova last year. Yeah, I seen 19. I didn't see 20. But still, that's not 24.5. Okay, they were a 24.5-point underdog last night. That's I can't imagine that's happened in the, you know, in the Thompson era of Georgetown basketball. So Ben Standig wrote a story last night for The Athletic. Very interesting Daron Payne story. And it speaks to, you know, what the market for these defensive tackles is going to be in the offseason. Remember, he's playing on his fifth-year option year. He is right now scheduled to be an unrestricted free agent at the end of the year. Daron Payne's having an outstanding season. You know, I've mentioned this statistic a few times this year. I think it's a very telling statistic because if you look at the players on the list, you know that it is reflective of something that great players are able to do. It's the NFL tackles for loss stat. Max Crosby leads the league in tackles for loss with 17. Great player. We know that. Za'Darius Smith is second in the league with 15. Great player. We know that. John Allen is third in the league with 14 TFLs. We know John Allen is a great player. Daron Payne is tied for fourth in the NFL. But listen to the players that he's tied for fourth with. In tackles for loss, he's got 13. Micah Parsons, you may have heard of him. Nick Bosa, Brian Burns. I mean, those players that I just listed, all right, Crosby, Smith, Allen, Payne, Parsons, Bosa, Burns. The least known player on that list for NFL fans would be Daron Payne. And maybe John Allen next. And by the way, after that, the names on the list, Danielle Hunter, Christian Wilkins, Montez Sweat is eighth. Washington's got three players in the top eight in the category of tackles for loss. Chris Jones, Matthew Judon, Grady Jarrett, Aaron Donald, Miles Garrett, Von Miller, Khalil Mack, Josh Sweat, Cam Jordan. I mean, the list of players that make this list are all, as we know, great players. So Ben wrote last night about Daron Payne that he writes, from a quick glance at the current market, one might guess Payne's deal to get him signed would land in the same range as the four-year, $72 million contract extension that John Allen signed before the 2021 season. All right, that would be $18 million a year, which, by the way, the franchise tag is just a little bit north of $18 million. And I think it's $18.2-something million per year for defensive tackles in 2023. If Washington was forced to franchise tag Daron Payne, they'd pay over $18 million for 1 year. So understand that the starting point for any kind of conversation with Daron Payne, you know, if you're Daron Payne's agent, is $18 million a year. But really, you know, it's probably a little bit more than that if you want to get a deal done. Because we'll take the 18, although players don't love the franchise tag, but in recent years it's actually proven to be something that's worked. Obviously, we're very familiar with how it's worked here for two players, Kirk Cousins and Brandon Scherff. Here's, though, a quote from there's a couple of quotes in here that Ben has in his story about what the defensive tackle market is going to be like when the season ends. An AFC pro personnel guy who did not want to speak on anything other than the condition of anonymity. He said, I don't want to put that reality out there, but they're going to get paid. It's going to be a robust market. Here's another quote from an agent. An agent told The Athletic, quote, the next wave of contracts for that group, defensive tackles, will push past the range of $21 million annually, a threshold that only the Rams and comparable Aaron Donald exceeded. This from another agent. It won't be close, significantly north of $21 million annually. People have blanked, first letter of that word being F, with the defensive tackles compared to the DNs for too long. Daron Payne is going to get paid. I mean, there is going to be a robust market. This position has blown up in recent years. Why? Well, you've always wanted those big interior run stoppers, space eaters, the whole thing. You know, the cliches about the interior defensive linemen. But in recent years, and really we're not talking about like the last two or three years, we're talking about the last 10 to 15, really. But with a much quicker passing offense, with emphasis with quarterbacks not to hold on to the ball long, with a lot of West Coast, interior pressure is much more effective because it's a straight line to the quarterback rather than a diagonal line to the quarterback. It's straight, and there's nothing that disrupts the quick passing game more than interior pressure. And if you have a defensive tackle who A, can stop the run and eat space, and then B, also pressure the quarterback, which both Daron and John Allen can do, you're very valuable in today's NFL. Chris Jones is entering the final season of his deal, which was four years, $80 million. All right. You've got Jeffrey Simmons, who for my money is the second best defensive tackle in football behind Aaron Donald. I do think Aaron Donald is in a class by himself, but I think Jeffrey Simmons is borderline in another class by himself. And then you get to the conversation of John Allen, Daron Payne, Quinnen Williams in New York. My God, is he good. I mean, these Alabama defensive tackles. Ed Oliver. Remember a lot of the reports about Ed Oliver when he came out of Houston, Denton, and people weren't sure. There was a lot of stuff out there about his attitude, his work ethic. My God, is he blown up into a big-time interior defensive lineman. Then you've got Dexter Lawrence, who Washington's going to face on Sunday. You've got guys like Hargrave. You've got like Rankins in New York. There are lots of guys out there. The market for Daron Payne, they're going to look back on this and they're going to say, we should have been aggressive. We should have been aggressive before he got to his fifth year. And they could have gotten a deal. Now, I do understand those of you who would say, you know, Kevin, maybe the reason Daron Payne is having this breakout, and I don't want to call it a breakout year, but his best year, is because it is a contract year. Okay, possible because, you know, the knock on him was consistency. The knock on him was, does he love it? Is he bringing it every play? You know, is he the same as John Allen when it comes to sort of the consistency, the desire, et cetera? I just think it's very obvious that Daron Payne is one of the 3 to 4 best players on the team. And the strength of this football team and the reason they are 7-5 more than anything else is the defense, which is led by their 2 interior linemen, Allen and Payne. And to have that moving forward, wow. So Washington's going to have to get super aggressive if they're not going to franchise tag him. It would be much better, clearly, to sign him to a long-term deal. You know, and if they don't have the $28 million at quarterback next year, and they have a rookie quarterback that they draft along with, say, Taylor Heinicke as an, you know, a backup that they can extend for, you know, we'll see what Taylor's market is. That's another conversation that we've had briefly in recent weeks. But Daron Payne, and really good story by Ben. He's got a lot of quotes in here. You know, there's another one. These agents are going to drive up the price points here, especially with the salary cap rising. Also, the gap between Donald and DeForest Buckner is significant. The wisdom says, look at the midpoint. Somebody might get that number. And we're talking now, you know, about $21 million plus per year. Daron Payne's going to be expensive to sign long-term. You know, the funny thing about him, and you'll hear Nick Akridge next hour with us, is that his overall PFF number doesn't rank him as high as the eye test does. But a lot of that, and you'll hear Nick explain that, is because of the number, the percentage of snaps that Daron and John are playing for this team right now. Very high. All right, up next. Gary Williams will be our guest. He was on my podcast yesterday. You're going to hear him on the early season success of Kevin Willard's Terps. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, theteam980.com.
All right, hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week 1. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Gary Williams joined me on my podcast yesterday. Maryland with a big game tomorrow night, opening up their Big Ten slate against number 16, Illinois. 2 top 25 teams at Xfinity Center. 9 o'clock tip Friday night. I started off by asking Gary, why so much early success for Kevin Willard and his basketball team?
Well, I think just look at last night. Louisville has a new coach. Maryland has a new coach. Anytime you take over a program, and I took over 5 of them, I guess. There's problems. You know, there's a reason why you're there as a new coach. And Louisville's 0-7 and Maryland's 7-0. And I think that speaks for itself, the job that Kevin Willard has done in terms of coming in, making sure the key players stayed in the program, which is really difficult to do with the transfer portal now and some other things. And, you know, just getting them to buy in to a way to play that's really entertaining, a fast-paced, pressing defense, fast-break offense, looking for the first good shot, that type of thing, which I think most basketball fans really enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked a lot in recent years about pace of play and, you know, getting to 80. And by the way, you know, I was thinking about you last weekend that when they put up 95 and 88, you know, on 2 good teams or 2 expected to be good teams in St. Louis and Miami. Specific to the players, what do you see with this team? What are their strengths?
Well, everybody's required from 1 to 13 on your roster. Everybody's required to play really hard on defense, to rebound. And then the other side of that is each player has a role to play offensively, given that they all set screens, hit the open man, you know, the basic fundamentals you need for a good offense. And I think that's what's going on the offensive end of the court while they're scoring so many points. No one is afraid to shoot when they're open, but yet, you know, the Scots, people like that, they're supposed to take the most shots because they're the best scorers. And so once you get that into your team, those things hopefully will continue to happen where you get the 80-point games, the 90-point games, because I think you can really be a good defensive team and still, if the score's 90 to 65, no different than 65 to 40. In other words, it's just a way to play, a style of play that Kevin's doing, and I think it's really entertaining.
One of the things Naki told me last week when I had him on radio, and he said, being with the team up in Connecticut last week, and he said it hit him in looking at the team versus St. Louis and Miami. He said Maryland's got some men. You know, they're all seniors. They're veteran players. You know, Scott and Hart, you know, and then the two, you know, the transfer portal produced Young and Carey for them. And he said, you know, you don't see that a lot in college basketball. How much, you know, I know they're new together, clearly, and it's not like Carey and Young in that starting backcourt have played with Scott and Hart and Juju Reese before, but how much of the experience factor is part of why maybe they're off to this great start? And by the way, I don't think any of us expected this. I certainly didn't.
No, and I didn't either. I thought, you know, it takes a year usually to get, you know, the team playing the way you'd like them to play, whatever. But, you know, the one thing about that, having those seniors come in, they know this is their last shot. You know, they can't go into the transfer portal again. You know, they're done, you know, in terms of that. So they figured out, and it says something about the quality of the kid, is they figured out that, hey, Kevin Willard wants to play this way. This is the way we're going to play, and we're going to try to win as many games as we can. I think, but the one thing, when you get to be a senior, you care about winning more than a freshman would in a lot of cases, because freshmen always think, well, we got next year, year after that. But these guys care about winning. They've been through some tough times where they've been before they came to Maryland. And the players that stayed at Maryland that you mentioned, they went through probably something that very few people have ever experienced, and that is your coach leaving after, I guess it was six games in the season. So, you know, that was had to be a traumatic experience because, you know, you buy into a coach and all of a sudden he's not there. So these guys, both the seniors and then the returning players from Maryland, have kind of combined in what they hope for this year, for what they want it to be this year. And, you know, they're trying to get it, that's for sure.
All right, what are you concerned about as you've watched them so far?
I'm concerned with their size, and I guess that translates into rebounding, too, against big teams. So far, you haven't seen a team, and Illinois will try to do this, come in and try to get Maryland's big guys into foul trouble because there's not, you know, no offense to anybody, but there's not a lot of guys on the bench that are those big, strong guys that can come in and, you know, really hold their own. And a big guy coming off the bench, if he can just, you know, rebound and play defense and, you know, make it tough on the other team until you can get the first string guy back in, then, you know, he's doing his job. It's teams are going to start to look at that, how to hurt Maryland by getting to their bench, especially with their inside players.
What do you think of Reese here in his sophomore year?
I think he's improved tremendously. He's certainly developed confidence. I think that was one of the things last year. He wasn't a real confident player, but I think he is this year. And then the other thing is, I as he goes along here, he's going to learn how to counter. You know, he's obviously, he wants to go over his right shoulder being left-handed, so he's going to counter that by really being able to go either way once he gets the ball with his back to the basket. But, yeah, you know, and he's one of those players that is gradually developing a complete game. In other words, next year, you know, face up jump shots, things like that, that maybe he's reluctant to do now, but they'll be part of his game next year.
Do you think, you know, in watching, you know, all of these games so far, you know, they pressure a lot. He runs that 2-2-1, you know, pressure. They drop sometimes into man-to-man. Sometimes they drop into 2-3. Sometimes I've seen them drop into defenses that I don't even recognize, to be honest with you. And I'm curious as to what you think defensively will be the best in these, you know, in these grinded out games in the Big Ten, especially – you know, not against the Michigan State, not against Iowa, the teams that like to run and like to play with pace, but the Purdue's and some of the other teams that will want to grind it out. How will they guard some of these teams? What will be the best way?
Well, I think you have to keep your pressure against those physical teams that want to grind it out, because those teams want to run their half-court offense against you. They don't want to shoot in transition necessarily, so you keep your press because you're not going to get hurt by it. Now, when you get into drop back defense, say they're, I think man to man is Kevin's, you know, defensive choice, right, if he had his choice. How do you help on the post? I think that becomes, because they play tough enough on the ball. They know when to overplay. They look for steals. They help. They do all the good things. But it's okay. They throw it into the post. Now, what do you do defensively? And so you got to have your double team rules down. You have to have your rotation down after you double team with the other three that have to cover four. And I think that'll be the key, you know, for Maryland against those really tough, big physical teams.
Yeah, I mean, when you mentioned size and talked about Reese, that's the thing, you know, against the Michigans and some of these teams that are big, that's where, you know, We'll see. I mean, and the pressure, and by the way, if they can rebound or if they can turn teams over on the perimeter and generate offense that way. But so far, Gary, when they've had to run half-court offense, I've been really impressed with the way the ball moves and the way they share it. What have you thought watching it?
Well, yeah, I'm not concerned. If they can continue to play like that, I'm not concerned at all with their offense, because the ball's moving, as you said. Players know their roles. They know certain guys are better shooter than other guys. And, you know, everybody doesn't want to shoot 20 times, which is really important. The one thing that, you know, is they when they make threes, I think they're pretty tough. You know? And just like a lot of teams, if they don't make their threes, then you got to find a way to get some of those long rebounds on those three-point shots. Because if you don't, the other team's going to run with them and they can hurt you in transition. So, but it's like any team. You know, you look really good when you're making shots, you know, that type of thing. But they're getting good shots. That's the key. I don't see anybody taking many shots where they have to adjust on a jump shot or something like that, or come down the lane and all of a sudden have to throw it. The thing I've noticed about the players, and maybe this is because of veteran players and whatever, is when somebody drives with a basketball, guys are getting into good position to get that kick-out pass.
Yeah.
They really do a good job of finding that open area, because you can be open, but if there's a defender between you and the ball, then you're not open. And so these guys are sliding where they have to get to create a passing lane for that open pass.
There was something I mentioned in the open. They missed a bunch of free throws last night. They're right now like a 70% free throw shooting team, so that's one of the things you'd love to see improved. But I remember you telling me something about turnovers. Like, you know, if you're playing in a style of play where you're trying to score 80-plus points, the turnovers are less significant. And they do, you know, they do turn it over a little bit here and there. They did, you know, last week, and I thought they could have scored 100 against Miami if they didn't turn it over. But just real quickly on protecting the basketball when you're playing this kind of style.
Yeah, I always thought if we could score 80, then I could accept 12 turnovers as the coach, if we could get to 80. And that was they're the two numbers I always looked at on the stat sheet, because you don't want to take away players' aggressiveness. That you want them. You want to be the most aggressive player. If you're the most aggressive player every time out, you're going to win a lot of games. And I think that's what we are right now. We've been the most aggressive team in all these games that I've seen, you know, so far this year. And if you say, hey, you know, you got to cut down on your turnovers. Well, certain turnovers, I like guys trying to make plays, especially if they're trying to make a play for another player. You know, you don't want to get on them in that situation. Now, that changes the last 2 minutes of the game. Obviously, turnovers become much more important. So in that key time, if it's a five-point game, whatever, you don't want turnovers. But during the course of the game, you know, you want to go. You don't ever want to take that aggressiveness away from the players.
All right. Are we going to have a big crowd Friday night?
We better. I'll be very disappointed if we don't, because the team has earned it. You know, there's no saying they haven't done what, you know, they've exceeded everybody's expectations. And I think we as Maryland fans, we as, you know, feel like we're still part of the program or whatever, we have to show and, you know, support the team.
Yeah. I kind of feel like there's a buzz, you know, starting with this team. And, you know, part of it was there wasn't anything expected. So sometimes it'll take some time, as you know, especially in the middle of football season, you know, around these parts. But a Friday night's the perfect spot. You know, it's not competing with anything. And it's a big-time opponent in Illinois coming in for the Big Ten opener. And, you know, I want Willard, I want him to feel what it's like you and I both know what it's like, you know, when you've got a big opponent and a big game, even in November, early December, in that building, because it can be special.
Yeah, some of the best coaches in the country told me after we played against them that, you know, moving out of Cole into Xfinity, you always worry about that. But they said Xfinity was as tough as any place they played. So we have to get that back. If you want to be a good team, you have to win at home. And part of that is the crowd. It's really a tremendous advantage in basketball when you have a great crowd. You know, it starts Friday night.
Tickets are still out there at umterps.com. Let's fill up the building Friday night. They've got a great home schedule coming up. I mean, they play a game, by the way. Their next four games are Illinois at home, then they're at Wisconsin, then they play Tennessee at Barclays in Brooklyn, and then UCLA comes into the building at Xfinity December 14th for a massive game. They're big-time Big Ten games in January. So start looking at this, because right now they are one of the surprise early teams in the country. I saw in the Lenardi bracketology yesterday, he's already got Maryland as a 6 seed. You know, before the season, there weren't expectations that Maryland would be a tournament team this year. So they are off to an incredible start. I hope you're well, and I hope to see you Friday night.
Yep, I'll see you there, Kevin, and look forward to it.
Gary Williams, everybody. Hall of Fame coach Gary Williams. Yes, I know it is just December 1st. And somebody reminded me on Twitter, Sheehan, you've referenced what Coach Thompson told you so many times about college basketball in November. Yeah. Coach once told me, I got real excited about a Maryland win in November, and he said, there is nothing more meaningless in sports, in team sports, than college basketball in November. And the reason he said that is that teams change so dramatically with graduation, et cetera, certainly in this day and age with transfers. I heard Vital last night on the Duke-Ohio State game say that he doesn't think the first rankings should come out until after Thanksgiving. I mean, look, North Carolina was number one last week. They lose two games. They're number 18. And if you watch them, they barely look like a top 25 team. And they were number one 2 weeks ago. But yeah, teams change a lot. They grow a lot. And by the time you get to February and March, teams can look much different. Still, the style of play and the efficiency in which they are playing is very exciting. And Maryland's number 22 in the country and has number 16 in town tomorrow night at Xfinity Center. All right, up next, Nick Ackridge from Pro Football Focus on what he's seen and some grades from the game against Atlanta, including a player we haven't talked about at all this week in his first start, cornerback Christian Holmes. How did he play? That's next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.